Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. We are presented by Green Venture Landscaping. If you're tired of guessing with your lawn, Green Ventures Landscaping uses professional turf application to get real results. Thicker grass, better color, fewer bare spots. Design, build, maintain. For more information, visit greenventurelandscaping.com. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock. By the way, an interesting stat that I've seen now on Twitter from Marcus Mosher, who is the host of the Locked On Cowboys podcast, senior NFL contributor at Fanside.
Okay.
He's put this graphic together of Super Bowl winning running backs and their cap percentage over like the last since 2009. Kenneth Walker, for reference, is 0.9% of Seattle's cap. So they just won that. Saquon Barkley last year, 1.5% of the Eagles cap, which on this list, pretty big number.
Yeah.
The largest one on the list dating back to 2009 was Marshawn Lynch in 2013. Who was a 6.2% of Seattle's cap at that time?
Wow, yeah, nice to have the running back on the rookie contract, because I mean Walker, is he a second round pick? I think that's right.
I think that is correct.
Second, maybe even third, but I think second. So now then it gets into the
second round.
To me, 41st
overall.
It's a no brainer. I think you're right. It will be a no brainer. You give that guy – there are people, though, that still say, running back, second deal, no thank you. Again, if you were in this town,
and
some of you were, Andrew, with a radio show, saying, you can't give Derrick Henry the second deal. Like, just, let's all remember, like, there's no rule in this league that's 100%.
By the way, three-time Super Bowl champion and former Titan, LeGarrette Blount, on this list three times. Patriots, he was 0.2% of their cap in 2014. 2016 Patriots, he was 0.6% of their cap. In 2017, he won with the Eagles, and he was 0.7% of the cap. There you go. LeGarrette Blount.
How about that?
Getting it done out there.
Hey, man. It's good to be on great teams.
It is. It's good to be on great teams. Joe, a former Vol in hot water this weekend, James Pierce Jr., who had a really good rookie season for the Atlanta Falcons. I think he finished with 10.5 sacks. In legal trouble this weekend following what the police said was a domestic dispute with WNBA player and former Vol, Rekia Jackson, over the weekend. James Pierce Jr. has 5 felony charges against him. He is now out of jail after posting bond on Sunday. But essentially, there was some sort of disagreement that took place here, which eventually led to him leaving the scene and going on a police chase where he crashed his car and then got arrested in the aftermath of all that. And if you think back, Joe, to last year, you know, James Pierce Jr., obviously a really good player at Tennessee, and then before the draft started to come up, all this talk about some character concerns and some issues with James Pierce Jr. came up. And we talked about it at the time. It was like, you know, nothing really ever came out at Tennessee while he was there in terms of, you know, any sort of issues that were going on behind the scenes. But it was all over the place in the pre-draft process. It didn't stop Atlanta for taking him in the first round. But now here we are, a year into his career, after what was a very good rookie season for him, and he is in very serious legal trouble.
This is a really, really awful, ugly situation. I don't want to speculate beyond, you know, there's speculation about a lot of, but I mean, the bottom line is like crashing his car into her car while apparently she was trying to go to the police.
Yeah.
I mean.
And then leave it. And then going on
5 felonies, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, aggravated stalking, fleeing police, then the charge of it's a Florida specific charge of resisting an officer without violence to his person. I mean, no lawyer, but you know, just on the legal side of this, I mean, even a plea bargain, I feel like, is he going to be able to avoid, you know, being incarcerated,
right,
first of all? And then you wonder, just there's a bit much bigger concern overall with all of this. I mean, this is ugly. So, I mean, hopefully this results in, beyond the legal aspect of it and the football aspect of it, like him getting help. And then, yeah, I think there could be a severe consequence here.
Well, you know, the general manager at the time for the Falcons when they drafted him was Terry Fontenot. And I remember, like, they drafted James Pierce because they doubled – didn't they have two picks in the first round? Yeah, they drafted Jalen Walker at number 15. And then they got back in and drafted James Pierce. So they essentially doubled down on their pass rush. And James Pierce, I think he had 10.5 sacks this year. But at the time, you know, Terry Fontenot was asked about, like, all the off-field stuff with James Pierce. And he said, quote, that the Falcons were about as thorough and detailed as you can possibly be, end quote, on doing research with him. And they talked with him, including, quote, everybody that's surrounded with him. And now here we are a year in, and just, like you said, it's a crazy situation that he's now in. And look, I guess with all this stuff that's happened now with the charges, and we'll see where all that goes, but there is, I think he's got like somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 million guaranteed left on his deal that could actually, that could be totally voided with all this. That's kind of the least of the concerns at the moment for me. Like, where's this all headed with James Pierce at the age of 22?
Yeah. Yeah, it's – this could have been tragic, like really tragic. And so this has got to be one of those, like, you know, like, again, beyond figuring out legally – you know, what kind of plea bargain may be there and all that stuff. Like, there's a lot that needs to go into, you know, him and getting out of this on the other side of this, because like this is not just like some. I mean, this is out of control. What this particular situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild. By the way, the Falcons have issued a statement on this, saying that they're gathering more information. Obviously, they've got an entirely new staff in there now with Kevin Stefanski, Ian Cunningham that's hired as general manager, and now their new president of football, which is Matt Ryan. So it's an entirely new regime that is in there that did not select James Pierce last year. But also, like, you know, from their perspective, I think you took the job and you're looking around and you're like, well, cool, we've got like a rookie pass rusher that just had 10.5 sacks this year. That's a pretty good building block on the defensive side of the ball. And now you have this situation, you're like, oh, my God. Like, this is a big deal here. So, like, I wonder what's going through the mind of Matt Ryan and Kevin Stefanski today as they're trying to sort through all this stuff.
Yeah. And on the big picture of the NFL aspect of this, look, there's plenty of examples of teams that take a calculated risk on the quote-unquote – and again, quote-unquote character concerns can be such a huge range of things.
Yes.
But remember, Pierce, like – early in his last year at Tennessee, he was kind of a popularly discussed number one overall pick. That's
yes.
The talent level we're talking. And so obviously this is another example for a team of like, you better be sure. You know, the Titans, by the way, had that situation with Jeffrey Simmons and what happened in high school and all that stuff. And they did the research and there was criticism here and all that, and it turned out to be obviously
the right move.
The right move, you know, great choice by them. But it's something to take very seriously. And this is why some teams with these things are just like, okay, nope, because whatever out of, you know, I don't know. I'd love to see the math. And there may not be math because, again, it's just different situations. But some teams are just like, it's just not, it just, there's enough good players that you don't have to do that stuff.
615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We've discussed a potential free agent target that the Titans could be eyeing this offseason. Well, you can take him off the board. We'll get into that coming up next and figure out where in the world the Titans are going to go at wide receiver. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. 94.9 The Fan, your home for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Tonight, the Commodores taking on Oklahoma at Memorial Gym at 8 o'clock. Pregame beginning at 7:45. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Well, Joe, we spent a lot of time last week talking about George Pickens and whether or not he would make it to free agency. If he did, would the Titans have interest in him, given the 93 catches for 1,429 yards that he put up last year in Dallas? Well, it doesn't look like he's going to make it to free agency. The Cowboys, according to Adam Schefter, are expected to place their franchise tag on George Pickens and then hopefully, for their sake, eventually lead to a longer-term deal with him. So a little bit of a timeline here in the NFL. So you got the window to use franchise tags is coming up, I believe February 17th is the day that starts. We're a month away from today from the legal tampering window opening in NFL free agency. So as we know, I mean, NFL free agency, I think, officially opens March the 11th. By the time that opens, there will be about 75 deals that are out there.
Ready to be announced.
So basically, NFL free agency is a month from today, Joe. So you can take George Pickens off the list, reportedly going to be franchised by Dallas, and then they're going to work on a long-term deal with him.
That's good. I was sick of arguing about him anyway. Get him out of there. Congrats. Congrats to him. Congrats to Dallas. Probably, well, who knows? Dallas, they do weird stuff. But I was going to say, he has some comment on him. They're doing that. Although the tag is also, like, it's like tag with the idea of doing a long term. Let's see if it's like the long term is done, or if it's like, let's tag him. We'll do one more year.
Yeah,
you know, it could be that too. But that's a big number. I mean, at that position, the average of the top three, right?
I believe so.
It's a big number at that position. So
big number.
He's gone.
Big production. We'll see what happens on that front. So now the question is, you know, the Titans. I mean, look, the Titans are looking for a lot of different wide receivers, number one and otherwise. But eventually, like, you're going to need to find a number one wide receiver if you're the Titans. So how do they go about doing it? And is it possible to do it this offseason? Now, look, as we get deeper into the draft talk, there are still, I'm sure, going to be people that look at it and say, you know, take a shot on Carnell Tate. Get Carnell Tate in there. We were talking about a lot of those different options that are going to be there towards the top part of the draft that the Titans could go with their pick at number four. A lot of people today have looked at it and say, man, there should be a lot of edge rushers that are available there that could really help this football team by the time the number four pick comes around. I think at this point, with Pickens not going to be in free agency, you look at free agency and it's like, okay, I don't know, could you get Wandale Robinson to come here? There's some history there with Brian Daboll, so what could that look like? What's his future going to look like? We've talked about Dobbs. We've talked about Alec Pierce from Indianapolis. Neither one of those guys are number one wide receivers, but they're good players, and the Titans can go get them. But, like, long-term, looking at it right now, how are you going to solve your number one wide receiver problem if you are Mike Borgonzi and the Tennessee Titans right now?
Yeah, well, I know that this is not the team to look at as a model because they just got smoked. They were in the Super Bowl last night. I mean, some teams have multiple twos. Yeah, twos and twos, threes. That's not, I mean, ideally, that's not what you want. But the Titans aren't going to be able to address everything this offseason. And so maybe they end up with a good player out of free agency. And maybe they draft defense early, and then they have another middle, more round receiver that they hope can come in and matter, as they did with two guys last year that turned out to be good choices the fourth round, and roll with that, and you don't have a clear one. I mean, it's not ideal. I love the idea of being able to draft a receiver in the first round and develop that player into your wide receiver one. I just kind of have my doubts that at four, there's anyone that good overall as on the overall board to do it. So it might just be, you know, it might just be adding talent, adding depth, adding quality, but not having that guy. And if that's the case, that's fine as long as whatever you do otherwise, like in the first round, hits.
Yeah, I mean, that may be the way you have to go. And again, you know, we could get into the Ridley discussion. What do you do with Ridley and his contract? You know, of the receivers that could be available in free agency, which one makes the most sense for you to target, whether it's Dobbs or Pierce or whatever it is? Like, we'll have plenty of time for those discussions. But the draft part of this is interesting because I do think, you know, eventually if the Titans are going to find their number one wide receiver, it's probably going to have to come through the draft. Like, that's typically how those guys are found in the draft. Now, I mean, I guess you could trade for A.J. Brown again this offseason, just bring him back home.
Yeah.
That could be possible.
There you go.
But typically you find those guys in the draft. So, I mean, at number four, is there any wide receiver when you go through your process here? Is there a wide receiver that is worthy of being picked number four in the draft? Especially when you compare him to some of these edge rushers that will be there. Like, there's going to be an edge rusher there at number four that the Titans are going to have the opportunity to pick, and then we'll see what that looks like. Can you find, like they did with A.J. Brown, can you find a guy that turns into that in the second round this year? Like, it's not impossible to find that, but you got to do a pretty good job scouting those guys.
You do. I mean, what round did Puka Nacua go in?
Was he fifth?
I think fifth. I wouldn't say
fifth.
Maybe fourth, fifth.
Amon-Ra St. Brown, fourth round. It happens. Like you said, A.J. Brown, second round, it happens. I've said it. I'll continue to say it, and then we'll see how it goes next year. My favorite receiver in this draft is Mekhi Lemon. I think he's got JSN, Amon-Ra type upside in the NFL. No one, I think most people, most of the mock drafts have him as like the third or fourth receiver going, you know, and like late in the first round. So I just would be surprised if the Titans, again, they have their own board. They do kind of end up seeming to be pretty close to each other, and that would be perceived as quite a reach. So
Todd McShay, latest mock, has Titans going edge.
There we go. Four.
With
your boy.
Bailey?
Yep.
Yeah.
That'd be a pretty good pick.
I like it. I don't hate that at all. I think that's probably, other than offensive tackle, of course, which we all agree they really should do. But
that's what I took away last night. I was like, you know what the Titans really need on their team right now? Will Campbell. That's what they need out there.
Someone called him a salon door on the text line. I thought that was pretty good. That's even that's a next step up from Mandor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually like insulting to compare Mandor to him. Like it's woo, and they were in the Super Bowl.
So. Brave will be thrilled with Mandor out there.
Yeah. But yeah, I just don't think Carnell Tate, I don't think he's that level player. I don't think Jordan Tyson is either. I mean, either of them could end up being the greatest receiver of all time. Ohio State receivers typically are working out pretty well in this league. Although Marvin Harrison is a disappointment for where he went. But he's still, like, good. He's a very good player. And obviously JSN's incredible, and there's guys all over the league. But I don't think Tate is that guy. I mean, he's a clear second-best receiver on their team this year, and it's great to be a receiver on a team that has Jeremiah Smith.
Well, let me be clear. I think Tate's good. Is Tate a game-changing player in the NFL? Like, is he a number one bona fide big-time threat in the NFL? I'm not convinced of that. Like, I think he's going to be a good NFL player.
Yeah.
Is he going to be a great NFL player? I don't know.
That's what you draft it for.
Yeah.
You better be really confident in that if you're going to draft him at four.
Agreed. So if it's not coming in the draft, it's going to be interesting to see how the Titans find this, because I know everybody's answer to this will be, well, just wait until the next year. You can go draft one of those receivers. Well, if you're in a position to draft like a Jeremiah Smith or, you know, the Ryan Williams part of this is going to be interesting to see how the year he has next year, because it did not go Ryan Williams' way this year in college football.
But it's just hard for me to buy that he's not going to figure it out.
It's hard for me to buy he's not going to figure it out. But there should be some pretty good receiving options available in 2027. But, like, if you have the type of season that you want to have this year, which is taking a significant step from, you know, the 3-win team that you've been the last couple of years, like, I don't know, can you get to 7 or 8 next year? Well, if you do that, you're probably not going to be in a position to draft Jeremiah Smith in 2027.
That's right.
Right? So how do you solve this problem moving forward? I mean, if you're in a position to draft Jeremiah Smith in 2027, it probably doesn't speak well of Borgonzi and Salah's first year.
Play like your name's Jebediah for Jeremiah.
If they're in a position to draft Jeremiah Smith, you know, barring some injury that we can't sit here and foresee, we're probably going to end up having discussions about the quarterback after that, right?
The quarterback, right. So it's like, oh, you can get that guy. Yeah, but you need someone different to throw to him.
Yeah.
Oh, you can get that guy. Yeah, but the GM's got to be fired. So is he gonna the new GM gonna pick him?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, you probably don't want to be in that kind of position.
Probably not. Probably.
But it'd be great to get Jeremiah Smith.
I'm confident he's going to be a great player.
Him and nothing else. Yep. Tennessee Titans 2027.
Yep. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Not a very good weekend for Tennessee and Kentucky. Or Tennessee and Vanderbilt. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Green Venture Landscaping. They work with property managers and business owners who want clean, professional properties without the headaches. If you manage it, they maintain it. For more information, visit greenventurelandscaping.com. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up here in just a few minutes. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Joe, not a great weekend for Tennessee or Vanderbilt on the hardwood. Tennessee had a 14-point lead at halftime against Kentucky and saw that evaporate in the second half. They lose 74-71. So, Joe, the second time in a three-week span that Tennessee was handling Kentucky through one half and then just totally choked it away in the second half.
I don't know what – obviously, Rick Barnes had tremendous success against John Calipari and really flipped that series around. I think it kind of turned it into the best rivalry in the SEC. They had a lot of success against loaded teams. And the Mark Pope thing is really bothering him so far. And again, they just had no reason to lose this game. But they go through. Still, they're prone to these droughts. And then all of a sudden, it's like it's just a clank fest. And they made some mistakes. I mean, Ament was overall had a great game. But again, like everybody disappeared as Kentucky kind of chips away, and then gets it to the end and just made the plays that Tennessee didn't at the very end of the game. So that's a tough one. I actually really kind of watching that game, you know, I'm like, okay, look where this, you know, where things are going for Tennessee here. I mean, you get that win, and that's a good win down the road. I mean, Kentucky has put themselves in a good position where they're you know, in pretty good shape getting the tournament and stuff like that. That would have been a fifth straight win for Tennessee, including at Alabama and against Auburn, at Georgia, and you blow it. So it's a tough one. They've got what should be three straight wins here in the next three games: Mississippi State, LSU, Oklahoma, before coming here to Vanderbilt. So, and that one could be a big one.
It could be. I mean, you felt at the half you were up 47-33. I think Amen had 19. In the first half. And it's like, well, here he goes. I heard, I think it was Jimmy Dykes on the broadcast. He was like, Amen's playing as well as anybody in the country right now. And I was like, you're darn right he is, Jimmy. Let's get out there. And then the second half, you just totally evaporate and choke it away. And, again, second time in a three-week span that you've had Kentucky on the ropes that you just totally let them off the hook. And now they've swept you in the regular season. And we'll see what that looks like in the SEC tournament if they get matched up again at some point. But – that's a big win for Kentucky and Tennessee, to your point, and they did it to begin the game. They had one possession where they, to their credit, kept getting offensive rebounds. I think they got like four offensive rebounds on this one possession at the beginning of the game. But they were just chucking things up and bricking left and right. It's like this team has a special ability to go through stretches where they just cannot hit anything, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, if you just take these two games – where like they were in total command,
yeah,
and you don't blow them. You're 18-5 right now. You're 8-2 in the SEC, tied with Florida at the top. I mean, you're a top four seed. Just those two games.
Yeah.
Not to mention some of the other games that, you know, that they could look at right now and say, man, I mean, those are the two close ones. You know, they also lost the Kansas game that they could have won and stuff like that. But the Syracuse game, I mean, that's a tough one right there for sure. But they also aren't far from being, you know, I think that level of team. I still think that they could be a top four seed, a protected seed, and that is the goal here moving forward. Plus, you know, again, those two games against Vanderbilt. Coming up February 21st and March 7th to close the season at home. I mean, those are big games, you know. And I think the rivalry is going to be really good this year.
I'd say they're our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Steve and Franklin to the program. Steve, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Looking forward to the 60-degree weather.
Same.
This Tennessee team, it's amazing to me how you can be one of the best rebounding teams in the nation and then get outscored in the paint by 20 points and miss layup after layup. I believe Estrella missed 9 shots. I know he scored 11 points, but and then Brown, O'Para, and Carey, they contribute absolutely nothing offensively as far as scoring goes. And, I mean, it's just the fact that this team's only going to go as far as Amen and Gillespie take them, and fortunately, I don't think that's going to be very far. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep, thank you, Steve. To his point, Estrella, 4 of 13 for the field in that game. Not good.
No, and he's a talented player, and I'm a believer in him, but he is a bunny misser. It's just – and it, you know, sometimes it gets in your head – this year, he has missed so many. You know, Carlos and Carey, in some games, Carey is a factor offensively. You know, it kind of depends on the matchup. You know, length can bother him, but he can be, you know, an effective player. But, yeah, Tennessee, number one in the country in offensive rebound percentage, 45.2% of its misses.
Yep.
And really, that's – I mean, Rick Barnes had good rebounding teams, but he's never had that. Like a team number one in the country with that. But, you know, the 3-point percentage, 35. And the other defense is, it's good, but it's 16th in KenPom. They're used to being in the top 2 or 3. Their offense is in the mid-30s. You know, the benchmark for can you be a national champion contender typically is within the top 30 of both of those things. It's not an impossible thing for them, you know, to get there with their offense, but is their defense good enough, you know, in March in these big games against the really good teams? Because that's one thing you could count on, obviously, more, especially with Ziegler just at the point and all the disruption that he caused.
Not a great loss for Vanderbilt over the weekend either. They lose 92-91 to Oklahoma. They were outscored 48-34 in the first half. They made a push in the second half, got it within one, but 92-91, the final score there. Oklahoma wins. And Oklahoma had lost 9 in a row Heading into that game. So not a great loss for Vanderbilt at home against Oklahoma over the weekend.
No, and that's a game that I thought, can they survive this game? Duke Miles still out. Frankie Collins still out. Tyler Tanner's got something with his hand too, but he went nuts in the second half. But, I mean, they're not that good without, especially without Duke Miles. You know, it's been Tanner and Miles together. You know, he had the minor surgery, so – I'm not sure if he's going to – like, does he have a chance to come back at Auburn? Because certainly that's a tough game coming up tomorrow night. I don't know. But until they get him back – and the Frankie Collins thing is kind of a weird situation, and it's kind of vague over there the way they're talking about it. But they need them both, but especially Miles. Without Miles, this is not – it just doesn't have enough. And they're going to be limited inside no matter what. You know, that's how they're constructed. They're not very big. But you got to have Tanner and Miles playing off each other to be the team that we saw early in the year. So if they can survive Auburn, I mean, shoot, there's a big one, you know, with Texas A&M coming in here. This is a huge week, and I don't know if he's going to be back or not. If not, I'd probably pick him to lose both of those games.
Yep, that would not be good. But like you said, I mean, Tyler Tanner had 37 in the game, went nuts in the second half, and almost enough for Vanderbilt to overcome it, but not quite. 92-91 the final for Oklahoma there. By the way, did you see the Lady Vols yesterday?
I didn't really watch the game.
Absolutely smoked by South Carolina.
I wasn't surprised by the outcome. I mean, South Carolina is, again, just a complete – I mean, South Carolina, UConn, in the national – or yeah. UCLA in the national title game is going to be unbelievable.
93-50, the final yesterday.
Yeah.
And Kim Caldwell, not very happy after the game. Basically said, yeah, team quit. So –
yeah.
Going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
She called her team out big time and yeah basically said they quit.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting one. Actually, someone asked Dawn Staley then about that. Like, I guess basically, like, what advice would you give? And Staley's like, well, one, I probably wouldn't say that. But, you know, and she went into this whole thing about, hey, find something you did well and focus on that, because if it's all from the negative, then it's going to be a negative response. Again, this is coaching philosophy. There's still coaches out there who coach with the negative, and it works. But Dawn Staley has got herself a heck of a team. And, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the response from Tennessee. It's not a great team.
That's the worst loss in the history of the program.
That's not good. It's not a great team. It's, you know, it's year two for Kim Caldwell, so you do have to remember that. I do wonder, you know, I do wonder if her style, obviously it's defensive pressure, she's all about that, turning people over, right? That's one of those, it's a style that, like, when you play lesser opponents or even like equalish or lesser opponents, it can really give you an advantage. But when you play the best of the best, you know, so far it just hasn't really worked out. So it's an interesting thing to track. I mean, it's early, but it's a little bit alarming.
Well, especially in like today's college sports landscape. I mean, I kind of like a coach every now and then getting up there and being like, just calling out the players. But it's also like, well, you're the coach, and you pick the players. So if you got that big of a problem with the players, you're the one who picked them. So ultimately, it comes back to you.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I think both things can be true, though, right? Like you can take accountability, and you can also say, I mean, Rick Barnes calls out players publicly all the time.
Sure,
you know, like, and usually, like, specifically, like, I need this guy to start rebounding, or he's not going to play. Yeah. You know. Some people don't like that. That's a much more of an old school way to go about it. But I don't mind it. It comes down to, like, you know, can they handle that? And so probably fewer players now can than could 10, 15 years ago.
Probably so. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rob Rant coming up next. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
You want to be in the all 22, Robert?
I feel this pressure to always wipe.
Here's a man that has touched the hem of Jesus.
A lot of grunting that goes on in places like that.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
And my belly was so big, I was like, dude, I'm going to die soon.
I will fart your world up.
What's wrong with really a loose pocket mint? Real ones don't wipe.
Boy, did that make me mad. It is time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program, either the Rob Rant or the Rex Rant. Or, you know, at some point, we're going to get a rant from Ian Safar. Need to work on that.
The last rant I had was very anticlimactic.
That's all right.
Disagreeable, Ian.
Yeah. We'll get another one soon.
So I wish
whenever he's ready. I'm not going to force him to do it.
Yeah, no, it's got to.
Whenever something bubbles up,
it's got to come naturally. Yeah. Like wiping, apparently, which I have no idea what the context of those comments
were. Ian's file runs deep in there, man.
Yes, it does.
Gets deeper by the episode.
Deep. Yeah, it's deep, all right.
I got a couple of different things to complain about today. I understand the Super Bowl has turned into this big spectacle, and we got to have like every possible either pregame ceremony or just anything that has nothing to do with football going on either before, during, and after all the games. I understand, like, we're never going back. That's what it is now. I mean, it's the biggest sporting event in the world. It is what it is. It was hilarious yesterday. So before the Super Bowl started, I guess they had Green Day come out there, and they did this little pre-concert thing. And while they were singing, they had all these legends walk out from this basically box that they put on the field. So it's like, here's Steve Young, and here's Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning, and Lynn Swann. It's like, all right, cool, there they are. And then Green Day's in the middle of their concert, and all of a sudden, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning, and Lynn Swann, and all these guys just walk up on the stage. And then before the game, they're doing the coin toss, and it's like, and now joining them on the field is Peyton Manning and Lynn Swann. It's like, Oh, my God. How many times do we have to introduce Peyton Manning and Lynn Swann out here? It's like, once is enough. Do we have to sit here and have Lynn Swann walking around the entire stadium 55 times before the game starts? Get Lynn Swann on the field. Keep him out there. Introduce him one time. It's all good. Like, even they're like, and here for the seventh time today, here's Joe Montana. But we're in San Francisco, by the way. Here he is. Here he is. It's like, oh, my God. Can we just get the guys out there one time and go? I saw more Lynn Swann yesterday than I've seen in years, which is fine. I have nothing against Lynn Swann.
Great player.
But they introduced him like five times yesterday. I was like, here's Lynn Swann again. It's like, holy crap, man. Good grief. So you had that. And then you have Collinsworth. And Collinsworth, I think, is a special offender of this. This is what he does a lot. Like, in the first quarter of the game, he's like, you know, the game could come down to this one right here. And it's like, Collinsworth does that a lot. He did it again before the half, too, when the Patriots were backed up. He's like, well, they better get a first down here or they're going to be in some serious trouble. Like, the game's over with if they don't pick up a first down on this play with more than 36 minutes of game time remaining in the game when it's 6-0 at the time. He does that a lot, and it drives me nuts.
He also does this is the best defensive performance I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and again, it was great. It was great. But like the hyperbole from Collinsworth, I cannot remember seeing something like this, you know, which he says every time he does a Pat Mahomes game, you know. I'm not sure I've seen anyone like this before. Okay.
I think the Mahomes stuff is starting to bother him a little bit. He gets asked about it all the time now. He was doing some media day stuff. He got asked about it. I think it's starting to upset him.
Starting to get a little bit upset? Yeah. Yeah. It's like Dick Vitale and Duke, you know. People start calling him Dookie V. So it's like I don't know. I can't think of anything that you'd call Chris, but yeah, he's a quarterback fluffer, you know. Yeah. But you know, that's a lot of people are. It's just a little bit hype. Yeah, it's an interesting point on the legends and just the whole. All of it is just it's all too much.
Well, I knew you were going to be disgusted when Brady and Montana were out there. I was like, oh boy, this is not friendly for Rexro. Brady and Montana coming out there.
No, both great quarterbacks. I mean, I'm glad that. You know, I'm glad they got Joe Montana out there. He played for the Niners. He's certainly one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen in the NFC West. So, solid.
Top five quarterback in Niners history, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. Steve Young, one.
Alex Smith, number two.
Oh, man, that's an Purdy. Interesting one. Yeah. Let's not forget Jeff Garcia, that guy.
Jimmy G.
Jeff Garcia, my fantasy team, you know, back in the day. He put some numbers up there, throwing it to T.O.
Yeah.
He absolutely. Did. Yeah. He's top five. Montana's top five for sure.
That's good. That's good. Brady, we'll see whether or not he ever gets in the Hall of Fame, but he got his little moment last night walking out on stage 55 times.
Yeah, in case he doesn't get in the Hall of Fame, at least he has that. You know?
He was all over those red carpets, too. Everyone was Brady everywhere.
Yeah.
I'd never seen so many interviews with Brady. And just ridiculous, stupid stuff. He has no personality.
Hello.
Like, why are we asking him, like, funny questions about, oh, what's a, you know, come up with a one-line word association for this? It's like, oh, underrated. Hard worker. It's like, yeah, the dude's lame.
I agree. Now, he did have the best moment to me of the commercials, which was not good. I there weren't that many that I thought were good, but I mean, I thought the Dunkin' commercial was easily the best.
Too much AI in there.
Well,
in the Dunkin' one,
it was all AI.
They made Joey look young. Yeah, everything. But the references. If you get the references, there were some good ones, and the fact that we had Jennifer Aniston saying you like donuts, how you like these nuts, you know, like the playoff. That's pretty good, man. With Brady's face up against the. Which, of course, is a Goodwill Hunting. Yeah. That was easily number one to me.
The commercials have gone way downhill in the Super Bowl.
Which is
running out of ideas.
Because the money, the amount they're paying is not going down. But, yeah, there were a few other, like, you know, good ones. But, yeah, that one was the only one that I thought was great. And Brady was part of it.
Yeah, the commercials they've gone the other way. But, I want to congratulate Lynn Swann. All the airtime he got last night. Him and Peyton Manning both. It was special.
That's good.
When they did it for the coin toss, I audibly out loud was like, oh, my gosh. How many times are they going to introduce Lynn Swann tonight?
Hey, Lynn Swann, man. Incredible. Talk about a guy who's great in the Super Bowl. That Lynn Swann.
Yeah.
Also, brings me back to the days of, like, Lynn Swann and Jack Arute being sideline reporters.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's good Brady's next step. Brady can be the sideline reporter after the doing the games in the booth doesn't work out.
I would welcome that. I would welcome less of him talking, actually.
See Brady's interviewing skills.
I'd like to see that.
He had like this weird interview with Kenneth Walker. It was like post game after I guess one of the playoff games. Kenneth Walker had a huge game, and Brady did interview him.
Yeah,
and then at the very end, Brady's like, "Go blue," and Kenneth Walker's like, "Go green." It was very awkward.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Corey Curtis will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.